Welcome to Films from the Phantom Zone. This is your podcast about failed and forgotten comic book movies, where we watch a forgotten superhero movie and decide, does this belong in the Phantom Zone to be forgotten for forever, or out and about for everyone to rewatch and remember fondly? My name is Arnaldo, I'm your host, and I'm joined by...
Birdo.
Birdo, what movie are we doing today?
We are doing Man-Thing. I bet you didn't know that was a movie until we did this list.
No. I didn't know this was a movie until after we did this list. I think this is one I found afterwards.
Oh, shit.
So if you go back to like episode 3, we did like a, you know, as kind of an introduction to ourselves and what like our shtick is, we went through and all the list of movies that we were planning on watching within the scope of the podcast, right?
Right.
I don't know if you remember that. That list has like since almost doubled. So we might have to go back and do it again. But for some reason, like the original list, I thought I had everything. And then we like, as we go on, we keep on finding more well-hidden movies.
Well, yeah, because there's a lot that like just aren't even on like lists.
Which is crazy. Like, this is a proper Marvel thing.
Yeah. Like, the old Marvel Studios was actually like somewhat involved with this.
Right. Produced by Avi Arad, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's straight up like a Marvel movie.
Apparently, he was very hands-off with this one, though. And he said that was a mistake.
Oh, you know what? I read a little bit of the production, but you did a deep dive. So let's get going. So guys, we are doing this movie Man-Thing because Man-Thing makes a fun guest appearance in Werewolf by Night.
Yeah.
Which is not a spoiler. That's in the trailer.
No, and it's his MCU debut.
Yeah. We also just did a review for Man-Thing. I'm going to get these confused a lot. Werewolf by Night. That's already out. Check it out. But yeah, basically what we're going to do here is some background, our initial expectations of what we were expecting out of this movie, with whatever little information we knew going in. We're going to do a bit of a deep dive on background. Usually I'm just kind of like, hey, here's kind of the background of this character. Here's his debut in comics and whatever. He was in a TV thing before. But, Berto, you got a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot on him. And even what I have is like scratching the surface.
Okay. Cool. Then we're going to actually get into this movie. We're going to talk about the plot. We're going to analyze it to the best of our abilities before we do our favorite segment, Keep or Cancel, where we talk about the stars of the movie and decide if we're going to keep them or cancel them. Birdo, who are we talking about today?
We are talking about Rachel Taylor.
She's the girl. She's the girl in this movie.
She's the girl in this movie.
If you actually watch this movie with us, there's only one girl in this movie, so there you go.
No one like main character girl.
Pretty sure there's only one female in this movie.
It might be. Oh, there's the girl at the beginning that gets naked.
Oh, I'm sorry. There's two.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's two girls in this movie.
And then we'll decide if this movie belongs in the Phantom Zone to be forgotten, or if you should just like remember this movie and watch it with your friends. But in either case, we are also streaming on Twitch. We are live today on a Saturday. If you enjoy this podcast, you want to like do it with us, basically, you can hop on stream Monday nights, usually 8 o'clock Eastern time, and like chat with us, be a part of the podcast. But let's get going because we got a lot to cover. Birdo, background. What can you tell me about the character Man-Thing?
All right. Well, Man-Thing was first created by Stan Lee, Roy Thomas, and Jerry Conway, drawn by Gray Morrow. His first appearance was in Savage Tales #1 back in May 1971. He's a large, slow-moving, empathic, that means he can like feel people's emotions and stuff, humanoid swamp monster. So he's a giant swamp monster, basically, and mm-hmm. he can feel people's emotions. And he lives in the Florida Everglades.
Oh.
Near a Seminole reservation.
Right in our backyard.
Yep. Yeah, it's near a Seminole reservation and the fictional town of Citrusville in the fictional county, Cypress County.
They could have just made real counties. That's the thing. Because the Florida Everglades is real, right?
It is.
So what's the point?
Also, Cypress County sounds like it'd be real.
That's the other thing. In Florida, we have so many counties, and I don't know any of them. Like, I'm very bad about
counties. I
know
counties. The ones I've lived in. That's it.
Right. And I'm just now recently learning about Florida counties because of, like, legal jurisdictions and stuff like that and legal codes and...
Right.
People say, like, oh, it's in this county. Oh, in this county, they have these different...
Okay.
Where is that? Like, where is Pinellas County? Like, I don't know which one that is.
So if somebody said Flagler, Cypress County, you'd be like, oh, that's real.
100%. I'd be like, yeah, that's definitely.
Yeah, the town of Citrusville, yeah. Which also sounds like a real Florida town.
I don't know.
Anyway, his first live-action debut was in this movie.
Okay, makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and he was played by Conan Stevens, who's like a giant Australian wrestler.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We're going to get through the plot of this, but like, he doesn't really do much. Like, he kind of just walks around a bit.
He walks around like, looks menacing. That's pretty much it.
So they just kind of get a big guy.
I think
guy
there's
to...
one scene where he like picks somebody up.
But... Yeah. They just get a big guy to put in the suit then, right? Because I mean...
Yeah. It's like a Lou Ferrigno type thing.
I mean, Lou Ferrigno had FaceTime. You know what? It's more of a... What was that wrestler's name?
Kevin Nash as Super Shredder.
Kind of, yeah. Because Kevin Nash didn't really act until after that.
Yeah, because he just... In that movie, he just kind of walked around.
Yeah, they got him because he's big.
Yeah.
But I was going to say the guy who played Bane, he was a wrestler.
Oh.
In Batman and Robin.
I don't remember
I don't remember
that
his
was.
Name either, yeah. Anyway.
But yeah, anyway, his second live-action appearance was in the MCU in Werewolf by Night, which came out, you know, just a week or two ago. There, he was motion-captured by Carrie Jones, and Jeffrey Ford provided vocalizations. I don't know who those people are, but...
Good on them, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think they're actors so much as like VFX people, probably.
Yeah, like that's usually the case with stuff
guy.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man-Thing was first conceived in discussions between Stan Lee and writer Roy Thomas. Together, they created 5 possible origins for the character. Stan Lee provided the name, which had previously been used for unrelated creatures in Marvel's early sci-fi fantasy anthology series, Tales of Suspense number 7, which was back in 1960, and 81, which was back in 1966. So Stan Lee came up with the name by reusing an old name.
Man-Thing is such a name that it sounds like a 60s name you would call any sort of creature.
Yeah.
Right?
And I feel like, and we'll call him the Man-Thing.
But it's funny that they like TM'd it, that they were like, instead of it, this just being kind of a generic thing, they're like, oh no, this is the name of the creature.
Yeah.
You know.
This is the character now.
Yeah. Like, he's not going to get a better name. It's just going to be Man-Thing.
But yeah, Roy Thomas had a few things to say about the creation in a 2002 interview. And he said, Stan Lee called me in. He had a couple of sentences or so for the concept. Again, very Stan Lee.
So Stan Lee. He just drops a, hey, what if we do this? And then disappears. Yeah.
I think it was mainly the notion of a guy working on some experimental drug or something for the government. His being accosted by spies and getting fused with the swamp so that he becomes this creature. The creature itself sounds a lot like the Heap, which is another comic book character from, like, the 40s.
Oh.
Yeah, he's in the public domain now, apparently.
Oh.
Yeah. But neither of us mentioned that character at the time. I didn't care much for the name Man-Thing because we already had the Thing of the superhero team of Fantastic Four, and I thought it'd be confusing to also have another one called Man-Thing.
Correct. He's right.
He is right. That's the end of that quote. And Man-Thing does predate Swamp Thing, DC's similar character, by about a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
But both of these characters are very similar to the character of the Heap.
So I think that's where a lot of my confusion comes from, is that Man-Thing being a Marvel character and Swamp Thing...
Being a DC character,
yeah. Let me look at Swamp Thing real quick.
And I think Swamp Thing and Man-Thing actually shared a writer at one point.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't look the same, but like...
No, Man-Thing looks much more like Lovecraftian.
Yeah, that's definitely
Where Swamp Thing looks like a universal monster.
Oh, yeah, pretty much, yeah.
He looks like the Swamp Man.
Wait, what's Swamp Man?
I think that's a universal monster.
Okay, I think I'm confusing all these things. These are all things I've heard about.
Is the Swamp Man a universal monster?
No, I think you're thinking of the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Oh, you know what? Maybe I am.
But I think it's easy to, if you don't know much about any of these characters, it's easy to confound them all because...
They're all very similar.
Well, yeah. I mean, he comes crawling out of the fucking, like, swampy lagoon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like this misunderstood creature, right?
Same with Man-Thing. Which we will get into now that we are getting into his biography.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me a little bit about the fictional biography of Man-Thing.
All right. Well, his true identity is... Dr. Theodore Salas, also goes by Ted.
Mm-hmm.
He was a biochemistry professor who worked at Empire State University, and he was recruited by the U.S. Army into Project Sulfur, in which the goal of that was to allow soldiers to survive biochemical warfare. It was here that Ted created something called the SO2 serum, which gave the user immunity to all known toxic biochemicals.
Convenient.
Right. But this was rendered unusable when it was discovered that there was a side effect with the serum, and that was turning its users into monsters.
That's really par for the course, isn't it?
This is very science fiction comic book of the day.
Yeah. What you read can be applied to almost every Spider-Man villain.
Yeah. Or, like, Hulk villain.
Uh-huh.
Speaking of Spider-Man villains, after Kurt Connors lost his arm in battle...
That's the Lizard.
That is the Lizard. Ted met up with him in the hospital, and he discussed nanoscaffolding, and Ted confided in him about his attempts at recreating the super soldier serum that created Captain America. Because, you know, everybody wants to recreate that serum.
Of course. I'm sorry, but Ted was... Okay, so he was trying to make a super soldier serum, or was he trying to create something to survive biochemical warfare?
First, he was trying to do that. The super soldier serum was afterwards.
Okay. Two birds, one stone, right?
Basically.
He's already doing the research.
Yeah. Ted actually ended up helping Kurt Connors with cell regeneration research, which led Kurt Connors towards using lizard DNA in his stuff. So, in a way, Ted was partially responsible for the creation of the Lizard.
Okay, so this is Kurt Connors before he became the Lizard.
Yes, he's just Dr. Kurt Connors.
So it's like a retcon situation.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the first time you meet Kurt Connors, he's already the Lizard.
Yes.
And then it's like, oh, here's how I became the Lizard.
This is
there's
like,
a
oh,
flashback.
Actually, yeah. And then, you know, Ted Salas is here. He's the man thing, but his origin
ties
into the Lizard. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So Ted ended up falling in love with and marrying one of his students. Empire State University.
Inappropriate.
Ellen Brandt. Yeah, is that unethical?
You know, probably, but I feel like the real issue is the age.
True.
It depends on how, if he's like a young hip professor, like he's like in his early 30s.
Like he just graduated himself.
Or yeah, he's in his late 20s, you know, but like most professors, it takes a while to.
They're a bit older.
Yeah. You know, you'd be surprised. I had several really young professors that were.
Oh, shit.
I was also in school in my early 30s, so like just to kind of paint a picture. It's not like I'm if you don't know anything about me, it's not like I'm like 20 years old and there's like a 19-year-old teaching the class at a major university. That's not what happened. I'm saying, you know, if he's 28 in the fucking,
or even like 30 or so, and she's like 23 or something. It's not
That's not that bad.
No,
or maybe she's a grad student.
Also, it's like it's not like she's a high schooler. So
right. Yeah.
Like, they're at Empire State University.
Ellen Brandt, you have here she was in Iron Man 3?
Yes, so...
the movie?
She was in Iron Man 3 in the MCU. She was one of the AIM test subjects for Extremis. She actually fights Iron Man. She's the one with the red hair and, like, the burns on her face and stuff.
Is she, like, the main one that she... The one that, like, fights him in that town?
Yeah, that's her.
Really?
Yeah, that's Ellen Brandt. So, yeah, in the comics, she is married to Ted.
She's a cold-hearted bitch in Iron Man 3.
Well, we'll learn more about her here.
Right. Continue.
So, after marrying Ellen Brandt, Ted discusses moving his research to the Florida Everglades so that he can be somewhere a bit more secluded and to be closer to his friend, Dr. Connors, who also studies in the Florida Everglades.
Mm-hmm.
Funny enough. Ted gets himself reassigned to Project Gladiator, which is a SHIELD research program based in the Florida Everglades.
Okay.
While here, Ted modifies his SO2 formula as the basis for a new super soldier serum.
Mm-hmm.
AIM wanted this serum and conspired with Ellen Brandt, Ted's wife.
Okay.
Because she was feeling a bit bitter towards him because after their honeymoon, you know, Ted kind of neglected her and he's been like lost in his research and stuff. You know, typical scientist bullshit.
Married scientists.
He's married to his work.
Yeah.
Yeah. After completing his serum, Ted memorizes the formula and burns all records of it. Ellen leads Ted into an AIM ambush. He tries to flee this ambush and tries to make it to Dr. Connors' lab.
She sold him out,
yeah.
Wow.
While fleeing, Ted injects himself with the only existing sample of the serum. And then he crashes his car in the swamp because, of course.
Yeah.
Instead of dying in the crash, the serum mixed with the magical energies of the swamp we find out that the swamp is magical.
Okay.
Because, of course.
Because, Marvel. Continue.
This transforms Ted into the Man-Thing. And he loses control over himself. Apparently, he loses his intelligence, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so he kind of, like, loses control. He kills the AIM agents pursuing him, and he burns half of Ellen's face.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, in Iron Man 3, she's scarred up, right?
She is.
Wow.
So, that it still kind of adds
it's
up.
It's still plausible, right?
Yeah.
I wonder if they thought about this. I wonder how deep they thought about when they're making Iron Man 3. Because, I mean, she's a named character. It's not like she's a random bitch.
Right.
You know, like, they obviously would look into her history and be like, well, here are her characteristics. Like, she's a cold-hearted bitch. She got a big fucked-up face because she fought Man-Thing, who was her husband.
And she's with AIM in Iron Man 3.
Right. And that's probably why they picked her.
Yeah.
The AIM connection. But I wonder if while they're giving her the scar, they're thinking, like, because isn't it implied that, like, she was injured in the military? That's how they got them all.
It's implied, but it's never, like, straight up stated.
Yeah. She could have gotten injured from fighting Man-Thing.
Yeah.
And that's why maybe she got involved with AIM.
It's possible.
Or was already involved with AIM
and then got
injured. And that's why she took Extremis.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, a retcon, obviously, but that could be really cool.
Yeah, no, that could be cool. And there's various, like, loose references to Man-Thing throughout the MCU so far.
Oh, and you're going to get to that, right?
I will. Yeah, like, and after I talk about him, I'll probably just go over that real
quick. And
it's
not like in the MCU, I don't know what they're going to do with Man-Thing in the future, but it's not like he's ever going to be like, oh, yeah, my ex-wife.
Ellen Brandt,
who you may know from this movie Iron Man 3.
No, it's just, like, connective tissue. That's really it. But it's cool. Also, apparently Ellen was pregnant, and Ted didn't know this.
Wow.
I don't know how important that ends up being, though.
Okay.
Ted's transformation into Man-Thing was unknown to pretty much everybody, which ended up putting him at odds with some former allies, such as the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents that were assigned to Project Gladiator, and one of these included Bobby Morse, who is also known as Mockingbird.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah.
Who may or may not be canon in the MCU.
Right. It's
based on conflicting.
Right. There's some dubious canonicity.
Yeah. That's his origin. He's since gone on to fight demons, witches. He's been a member of the Legion of Monsters.
We mentioned those last week.
We did.
About the review, the werewolf
that is
by night.
Ghost Rider, Morbius, and the werewolf.
Mm-hmm.
He spent some time with the Thunderbolts.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Thunderbolts movie coming.
He spent some time with Howard the Duck.
Okay. Make that TV show right now.
He was also part of the Midnight Suns. I didn't write that down here, but he was. And he also ended up creating, fixing, and defending the Nexus of All Realities.
Okay. What is the Nexus of All Realities?
If you scroll down a little, I have some of that too. Well. The Nexus of All Realities is a cross-dimensional gateway providing a pathway to any and all possible realities.
Okay.
So just a way to, you know, go through various universes and stuff.
Well, I mean, that's what Nexus means. Like, it's like the one.
It's like the point
the
where
central
all of
hub.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Nexus was apparently created when Ted's car crash mixed his blood with the interdimensional magic of the swamp. And there was possibly a retcon here where he ended up actually making a deal with the devil.
Uh-huh.
To
Mephisto?
Probably Mephisto.
Okay.
To have his serum work.
Okay.
So, like, that's what gave the swamp supposedly its magic.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
Also, where Uatu, the Watcher, resides in the animated show, What If?
Right.
Where he's just viewing all the realities.
Now,
he's not.
He's in the actual Nexus, where he can see everything. He's not in the fucking swamp.
No. Right. Yeah. And apparently the entrance to the Nexus is in the Florida Everglades, so that's fun.
So it's a physical entrance to connect out, like, the 616 universe
to other universes.
Universes, and through the Nexus.
Yes. And Swamp Thing is, I guess, the defender of that.
Okay. Right. So, and he created this doorway? He didn't create the
Not intentionally.
Nexus?
He probably created the doorway to get
to it.
Okay,
yeah, like, okay.
But there's also examples of, like, other Nexuses being created by, like, the Fantastic Four and, you know, various other characters.
Jesus Christ.
It's complicated comic book stuff. But yeah, that's the Nexus.
I would really like it if in, like, Secret Wars or Kang Dynasty, they have to literally go to the Florida Everglades and, like, there's Man-Thing and he's like, y'all ain't getting through here.
Y'all ain't getting through.
You trying to do a secret war?
No. Anyway, all right. Powers include malleability, so he can just pass through like objects such as like fences and stuff by like just kind of oozing through the gaps.
Ooh.
He can fly.
What?
He has the power of self-propelled flight.
How?
I don't know how, but he does it. he has super strength.
Okay.
Chlorokinesis, which means he can control and manipulate plant life as any swamp monster should.
Yeah, of course. That's like a poison ivy thing, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Resistant to physical attacks. So, like, you know, if you try to, like, hit him with something or shoot him, like, it's just going to pass through him.
Yeah.
He's swamp material.
You can't shoot a tree.
No. Well, you can, but...
It'll be fine.
Yeah.
It'll just have a bullet in it.
Empath ability.
Mm-hmm.
So he can empathically sense the emotions of other organisms. So unless he's stimulated by external emotions, so like other people's emotions, he'll kind of just stay inert and calm. If he senses emotions, he'll seek out the source.
Okay.
And the way he does this is determined by the intensity of the emotion. So a mild emotion, like he'll be like curious and he'll like, you know, observe it and be like, you know, like, what is that? More extreme and violent emotions will provoke him to seek out the source and attack it. He himself doesn't have emotions.
Oh.
Yeah.
So he
lost all that when he transformed.
Jeez. So he basically mirrors the people around him.
In a sense, yeah. Because he feels what they're feeling and kind of just reacts to it.
Uh-huh.
That's why like violent emotions in others cause him discomfort, which is why, you know, he'll attack them. But it also produces a physical reaction on the surface of his body. Ooh. So, like, fear or violence will cause his body to create a foaming sulfuric acid. We see this in Werewolf by Night when he uses it on the guy's head. He, like, burns his head.
Oh, okay. Spoilers for Werewolf by Night.
Yeah.
Well, also,
scroll a little.
Yeah, also, what I notice in Werewolf by Night, again, another quick spoiler, just go ahead a few seconds. Jack, the main character, he explains, he's like, you'll be fine if you just talk to him like a friend.
Right.
Like, be friendly
to
him.
Be friendly with him. Like, yeah.
His name is Ted. Treat him like a person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, they didn't explicitly explain these powers. This is news to me. But, like, going back and thinking about it, that's definitely implied.
Oh, yeah.
That he reacts to whatever energy you give them.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So, like, fear or violence will set him off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anger and attacks. Yeah. Like, he's going to fucking murder you if you try to murder him.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, this sulfuric acid obviously burned the shit out of you, which is how he ended up burning Ellen in the comics. Like, he burned half her face with the acid.
Yeah.
I guess she was scared of him, which makes sense. Man-Thing will only attack a being that emotionally provokes him, and this also extends to parts of his own body that are no longer attached to him. So...
Oh, so if you cut off a branch, that branch can still fuck you up.
Yes.
Cool.
Which we kind of see in this movie, actually, a little bit. He's, like, controlling different branches and stuff that are...
Yeah.
He's also able to change reality,
what?
Grow in size, travel between dimensions, and regenerate himself.
Okay, well, I think growing in size and regenerating, that makes sense, because he's got these plant powers. Changing reality, I'd like to know more about that. And then the dimensional travel, I think you just said because
It's because of the Nexus.
The Nexus. He's there, right?
He has the ability to do that.
Okay.
And the changing reality, apparently he has just the ability to, like, pull from different realities.
Interesting.
And yeah, almost like how we see the reality stone used in
Avengers
Infinity War.
Yeah.
That is Man-Thing. A few MCU references to him leading up to Werewolf by Night. In Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1, he's mentioned by Maria Hill on the phone. Apparently he was in the S.H.I.E.L.D. files that Black Widow leaked during Winter Soldier. So S.H.I.E.L.D. knows about him. We have the Ellen Brandt connection in Iron Man 3. A statue of Man-Thing is seen on Sakaar in Thor Ragnarok, which is interesting.
That is interesting. You think he's I know it's just an Easter egg, but it's like, we try to think about it a little bit more.
Is that canon or is that just thrown in there?
Yeah. Speaking of Sakaar, there's something I want to talk about when we get to Where's Mephisto? We're talking about, which is our second podcast, by the way, on our Patreon. Anyway, we're going to be talking about She-Hulk. Finale.
Mm.
There's a mention of Sakaar, and if you're watching She-Hulk, you haven't seen the finale, I'm not about to spoil it. There was a mention of Sakaar earlier in the show anyway, but there's something that makes me go, how? And I like to talk about it.
Okay.
We're going to do that later on.
All right. Well, that's it for the MCU references.
Cool. Yeah, let's move on. to this movie. Birdo, you still got some more for us.
Yeah. All right. So back in 2000, Marvel Entertainment entered into a joint venture agreement with Artisan Entertainment to turn at least 15 Marvel superhero franchises into live-action films, television series, direct-to-video films, and internet projects. Interesting that they were thinking about internet projects back in 2000.
I think it's one of those things that they put in the clause.
Just in case. Yeah, because I don't think they actually ended up really doing anything.
Yeah, because this is around the time where they're like, well, you know, we can do short
things. Well, this is when the World Wide Web was like blowing up. Video streaming wasn't big.
Video streaming was on the way.
It was on the way, but it was still like you had to...
Yeah.
You were downloading stuff.
Right. And I think they're like thinking like, hey, like we could do webisodes.
You know, you spend 2 hours to download this 5-minute video and watch
it. Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
But one of these franchises include an adaptation of The Man-Thing.
Artisan did make something, though.
Artisan made this.
No, they made something else.
Oh, I don't know what their other project was. I know this was their last project.
Oh, wow, that's funny. I either wrote it down or I looked it up. Continue.
Plans to make a film about The Man-Thing were first announced in 2001. It was originally considered for a direct-to-video release, but after the success of Blade, X-Men, Unbreakable, and Spider-Man in the early 2000s, the film was moved to a theatrical release on October 31st, 2004, Halloween.
Oh.
They did this to try and exploit the success of superheroes.
Uh-huh.
But then it ended up debuting on the Sci-Fi Channel in 2005.
This didn't get a theatrical release at all?
It did overseas.
Oh, okay.
Because reportedly test screenings were so bad that people were walking out before the movie was done. Honestly, I can kind of see that, I guess.
Punisher, they did the Punisher.
Oh, the first one,
yeah.
The one in Tampa?
Yep.
Oh, okay. That was after this then, right?
2004, yeah.
Oh, right before, around the same time.
Around the same time, yeah. Right before, yeah.
Okay. Avi Arad said that this film was more of a departure from the original comic than other Marvel films at the time due to this being a horror film with a menacing central character. Here's the thing. This seems like less of a departure from the character than some of the other movies at the time.
Kinda, yeah. We'll get into it, but yeah.
Yeah. Avi Arad also said, and at the time he was the CEO of Marvel Studios, he admitted that it was a mistake not keeping tabs on the production of this movie.
They sent it off to Australia, right?
Yeah. It was being filmed in Australia. And a quote from him says, "The one hiccup we had was the one project we didn't micromanage." Okay.
Yeah, shut the fuck up, dude. Yeah. Because the other ones were so successful. Yeah.
He said, "We were not going to the Outback. There was so much going on. We will never do that again. We should never have trusted anybody that far away without our supervision. Thankfully, it was a small movie and not a disaster. If we were there and on top of it, it would have been an amazing movie.
Would it?"
I look at the horror genre and I think, shit, I can't believe this. We've learned our lesson. Okay.
He's full of shit because, you know, Marvel Studios now films movies all over the world.
Right.
I mean, it's a different time also, but like they have multiple movies being made at the same time on different continents.
They do micromanage though.
All the Thor movies are, not all the Thor, the last two were filmed in Australia.
Yeah. No, basically, the movie didn't do well, so he's blaming the fact that he wasn't directly
involved. Because he's the best.
Because he's the best.
Right, okay.
He's a fucking toy maker. Like, come on. Anyway.
Okay, so initial expectations. Birdo, before you started watching this, what were your expectations?
All right, so before I started watching this, I was like, this movie's probably not going to be that good. First off, it was a Sci-Fi Channel movie.
Well, again, that's the thing. I think that informed my expectations more than anything.
That alone gives it like some sort of like a kind of stigma.
Yeah. Like a very low production quality.
I was expecting like a B movie horror movie that doesn't treat itself as a B movie, you know?
Right. Instead, doing a little bit of digging myself and learning that this is like a legitimate Marvel production that like, I guess towards the end, they're like, fuck it, sell it to Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
Which is different than Sci-Fi making their own thing.
Correct. Funny thing, though, is as I was watching this, what if I told you I think I have seen this movie before as a kid?
Oh, really?
There were some scenes, specifically when the guy gets, we'll get into it in the plot, but when the deputy gets torn apart.
Yeah.
I vividly remember just seeing that at some point on TV when I was like probably like 13 years old.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I saw that. I'm like, have I seen this before? I didn't remember anything about it, but I think I've seen this movie before.
You might have just like been flipping channels.
Just like caught it.
You caught the middle section of this and you're like, I gotta go. This is not doing it for me.
Well, yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't know what to expect. Again, sci-fi mostly informed my expectations. But after that, I'm just like, maybe, I don't know. I think my expectations were it's going to be horrible just because, I don't know, the poster, the fact that, like, I didn't know this existed until digging deep. Like, this is not a thing people have talked about. This isn't something you're like, hey, here's this Marvel movie people...
Nobody brings it up.
No one brings it up. You know, like, a lot of times, like, I knew about most of the movies that we've talked about. Like, even the Captain Americas and stuff like that. People are like...
You see,
yeah,
like, memes about them and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, here's Captain America from back in the day, blah, 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 late 70s or whatever. And with this, it's like crickets. No one's ever mentioned this after it came out. So.
Right.
Again, this wasn't even on our original list, so I'm just like, if no one knows about this, it's probably bad.
Literally failed and forgotten.
Oh, yeah. This is deep. And we've joked about some real deep cuts, like things that are like really forgotten.
Like Dr. Mordred. But even that has like a cult following.
Does
at the very least. I've seen people. We saw people getting excited about that when we said we were going to cover
it. That's true. I think it was because of the actor.
True.
On our next Phantom Awards, we should talk about what is the deepest and most forgotten thing.
Yeah, that's a good.
If we didn't already do that, I can't remember.
I mean, either way, it's a good thing to cover every year.
Yeah. All right, so let's get going on the plot. In the deep Louisiana bayou, a group of teenagers party to 2000s rock music. A couple go out on their own to make out in a canoe. The girl takes her shirt off, exposing herself, and accusing him of being a virgin. He yells, "I ain't no virgin," flips her over, and they start having sex on a canoe in the middle of the fucking swamp.
Oh, man.
Mid-thrust, the boy is impaled by a tree branch, and blood is sprayed all over the naked girl's breasts.
So this feels like the start to, like,
a horror movie.
Slasher film. Yeah.
It's this kind of like campiness. Two teenagers having sex out in the woods. Like, this is classic. And around this time, I'm like, all right, this is already a good start. Strong start. Right. You know, there was a narration at the very beginning. I think they could have skipped completely. It was something about like, there's evil in the woods in the swamps of blah, 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 Louisiana. It's like, nobody cares. It didn't do anything. Like, he said a bunch of words, and I'm like, I don't remember what any of them were.
No,
you know what I mean?
When something starts like that and it's not immediately interesting, I'm not going to retain the information.
No, and it wasn't necessary. It wasn't like a back... Anyway. But no, two kids fucking in the... you know, there's blood, there's tits. I'm in.
It's a fun start to the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. also, if you have sex, you die.
Right. Was this guy... was he a virgin, you think? Did he die a virgin?
I don't know. He said he wasn't.
Yeah, but the way he said it. I'm like, this
kid's no fucking virgin.
I'm like, this kid is a virgin. although he did get killed. Although he was mid-set. Like, they were already having sex.
So, no, he did not die a virgin.
Okay. I'm not going to press this any further. But here's something I don't like. Sex scenes that don't make total sense. And I see this all the time. Because these characters were wearing pants. Like, she took her shirt off.
Right.
Expose her boobies, right? Cut to... And it's not like some sort of cut like time has passed. It's just like in the next shot, they're having sex. I'm like, you guys were wearing pants. What happened to the pants?
Maybe they threw them into the swamp.
Right. But it's like, again, there wasn't a jump in time.
Right.
It was just like, is it in? It's in. You know what I mean?
Through the jeans.
So, and then a scene later, you see his butt. And I'm like, okay, well, just because you're not going to show that kind of nudity, and I get it, like, this is a movie. You wouldn't. This isn't a pornography. Like,
no.
But like, I don't know. There's still a sense of realism that you have to just like show them adjusting their pants. You know, like off screen, you can hear them. Oh, they took their pants off.
Yeah, like an unzip sound effect or something.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I feel like I've seen this enough times where I'm like, we're not stupid. Like, we know pants just don't magically come off.
Right. Also, I would never have sex in a swamp.
Oh, no. Hold on. First of all, of course not. These kids deserve to die, or they deserve to like catch diseases and
you,
die
which
from
you absolutely are if you do this. You're in a canoe in the swamp water.
No, they're like in the water. They like splish splash through the water to get to the canoe. Like, it was gross. Ugh. But I don't know. Just don't treat us like idiots. Anyway, Kyle Williams is the new sheriff in the bayou town of Bywater, replacing a recently diseased sheriff. His deputy Fraser shows him the town's problem, dozens of missing persons, and a native troublemaker named Rene LaRoque. The first missing person was another native named Ted Salas.
Hey, we know that name.
Yeah. whose disappearance came shortly after the new oil company bought the Indian land to drill for oil. The local coroner found the body of the boy who died while fucking in the swamp, seemingly attacked by a gator.
That didn't look like a gator attack.
I don't know. Gators are pretty ferocious.
It didn't look like he was eaten, though. It looked like a hole got, like, punched through his body. Sorry, they didn't look like bite marks.
And I mean, that is a plot point, but I was watching Midnight Mass, which we're going to talk about in our Halloween special, but so this is fresh on my mind, but the idea of becoming a sheriff in a, like, tiny, sleepy town.
Fuck that.
Fuck that. Like, you, fuck that. I'm realizing, like, I have a fear of hillbillies. I don't know. I don't know what it is. But it's like this idea of like
using a lot of horror stories.
Yeah. Especially if you're not like also like white and from the South.
Right.
Or specifically from that whatever area they're from. If you're an outsider coming in.
An outsider, period. Yeah.
What you doing there, boy? Like that terrifies me. And then the banjo music. There's a scare zone in Halloween Horror Nights this year. And it freaks me out because
it's too realistic.
It is way too realistic. You're walking through like a swamp, and there's like these swamp creatures. And
yeah, no, creepy like swamps and bayous and stuff.
Oh, no, thank fuck you. That. I'm like, this is giving me Deliverance vibes, and I gotta go. I gotta go.
Too similar to things that have actually happened to people.
Oh, fuck that. Fuck that. Sheriff Kyle is next called to an oil rig where locals are protesting, giving credence to a theory that the land has been cursed ever since they arrived to drill. Sheriff Kyle arrests the hot lead protester, Terry, for kicking him in the balls.
That's fair.
And the sexual tension palpitates between them.
Not sure why.
unclear. Oil tycoon Schist thanks the new sheriff, saying he hasn't broken any real American laws, but the protesters will tell him that he's violating the sacred Indian land and suspects Rene LaRoque of sabotaging his operation.
I mean, he has a point. Legally, he's in the right.
Yeah, I think that's what he's saying. But yeah. As we come to learn,
he's not a good
guy.
He's
quite corrupt, and he implies here that he handpicked Kyle to be the sheriff because he's young and
impressionable.
Yeah,
well, at least he would think that he's impressionable because
easily
he's young.
Controlled. Yeah, yeah.
He wants a new puppet,
right? Corruptible. Yeah. Here's your bad guy, right?
Just look at him.
Yeah. Also, there's never a good oil rigger.
No,
thriller,
no, like
right. Oil tycoons are evil in all media and probably real life.
Very much for profit.
Here's your first, like, if you don't know anything about this movie, you'll find out pretty quick that this was filmed in Australia and it's got an almost entirely Australian cast.
Yes, very, it was a local project there.
Again, set in Louisiana, and these guys are trying their fucking hardest to pull off, like, Southern American accents, but the Australian comes out real good.
My question is, why'd they pick Louisiana and not just Florida?
Oh, you know what? That's a good point, and I completely agree with moving this to Louisiana, because the Everglades are boring and no one lives there. That's why. So if you don't know much about Florida, we have swampland, right? But most of our swampland is uninhabited.
It makes it spooky. Well, I guess if you were to do this in Florida, it'd have to be like more of like a like expedition type thing, not a...
Yeah, people don't... So most of our swamp is protected because when Florida was getting settled and we kept on moving south, we kept on de-swamping the land. And it got to a point where we had to make agreements about protecting some of the swamp. And so that's where the Everglades were formed. It's relatively small. I mean, it's huge. It's like,
huge, but it's like...
It's like a 16th of the state. It's big, but when you consider that like the entire state was once swampland that we developed, it's a really small bit of that that's left over.
Yeah, it's just like the remains of what Florida used to be.
Basically, yeah. And so that area is nationally protected, and so people don't live there.
Except for SHIELD agents and...
Oh, sure.
Scientists.
In fiction. Yeah. But in real life, so you can't really set a movie there because there's nobody there. You can, however, set it in the Louisiana Bayou, which is a huge swamp where people do live.
And people are creepy around there.
Yeah, and they really do fish. And they're, you know, hillbillies that hunt gator. And there's an entire subculture there. that works a lot better in a movie
okay.
than the Everglades would.
So this changes something where you're like, all right, makes sense.
I'm totally, yeah, I'm for it. Also, like, I don't know. Cajun hillbillies are fucking scary. Like, we don't have those in Florida. We don't have, like, I mean, we've got, like, rednecks. Don't get me wrong. But, like, it's not the same no, as,
the
like,
closest we get is when you go up to, like, the Panhandle.
Those are just straight-up Alabama people, first of all.
It's like Alabama, Georgia.
Yeah. But I think this works a lot better set in Louisiana. I completely get it. Like, again, this is a movie that is...
like a creepy swamp town?
It's a creepy swamp town. It's not a Man-Thing solo movie where he's living by himself in the Everglades. That's different. And that might be what the MCU does with him.
But, I think you could do something pretty creepy with that, too, but you have to...
But again, something different than again, this. Again, people yeah. don't live there.
No.
So...
No.
At the sheriff's office, Terry explains... Terry's the girl. The hot protester. Terry explains that the oil company is pouring money in the town, so they refuse to see that they're actually destroying the land. The Indian leader, Ted Salas, took the money and ran off. After this exposition, he lets her go. She is trying so hard to suppress her...
very clearly Australian accent.
Yeah, but it comes through, let me tell you. Australians have a very... I love Australian accents, and I love Australians.
She has her Australian accent in Transformers, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. But not in...
In Jessica Jones, Jessica she just Jones. Sounds like,
yeah.
like she's in New York.
And a decade has passed, and she's become a much better actor, I think.
Yes.
We'll talk about it in Keeper Cancel. But Australians have a very specific cadence of speaking. It's not just their accent and how they pronounce words, because that's how most accents are. They have a certain cadence.
You hear Hugh Jackman sometimes, too.
Yeah, and something that they do that almost nobody else in the world does is that they finish their... Because I was listening to a linguist kind of break down what makes Australian accents kind of different. They end their sentences high-pitched, like a question.
I think Irish people do that, too, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know. I have to look into it, but it's a very local, like, Australian thing, which is mm-hmm. which is very cool. But even if you suppress your accent and you pronounce things like someone else, just by using that cadence and using that tonality,
something's going to be off.
You're going to sound Australian, like, yeah. boom, done.
And even if your accent is American, I'll be like, why are you talking
why,
like
yeah,
that?
Why are you talking like that? So it sticks out, you know, and God bless her. Like, this is not, she's supposed to be like a local Louisiana girl. And you don't buy it because she goes through three different accents throughout this movie. She goes from just kind of like regular American to Southerner to Australian. And like there's full scenes where she's speaking in her Australian accent. I'm like, did you give up today? Like, what's going on?
I think the director gave up. Like, you know what? Just do the scene normal.
And, yeah. And the thing is they probably didn't have the budget for like a linguistic coach.
No, probably not. They're probably just like, hey, watch some videos on people.
Yeah. Can you do an American impression? Do that. You know?
Yeah.
Anyway. At the local diner, Sheriff Kyle receives a less than warm welcome and meets a couple strange locals, a conspiracy theorist, some Cajun hillbillies, and an Indian shaman. He then visits a hospital where the girl from the beginning of the movie is being kept, having lost her mind. Lastly, he visits the oil tycoon whose rigs are being sabotaged. What's his name? It's Schist. It's Schist. Sheriff Kyle conducts his investigation, but the oil men have their very racist accusations and demand action be taken.
Oh, yeah. And I think Sheriff Kyle calls him out on being racist.
He calls them racist assholes, yeah. yeah. There are quite a bit of
slurs?
Yeah, racial slurs being thrown around yeah. here. So, I don't know.
I'm not going to repeat them.
Watch the movie if yeah. you... There is something I thought was really interesting is that they used the Confederate flag as a symbol to identify the bad guys, basically.
Yeah.
Which is, look, you might look at the Confederate flag and have its associations and be like, oh, yeah, anyone who flies this is racist and bad. But this is a different time. I mean, it's not that different of a time. This is 15 years ago. But I'm
it's
saying
a little bit different.
When you get into this community and you're telling a story, the people who might fly Confederate flags might also not be the bad people in the story.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because of, one, the location of where it takes place.
They could be...
It's a very just common yeah, thing there.
They could just be benevolent, slightly yeah. racist people. But this movie, you know, you see it tucked away in the background mm-hmm. of the characters you should be suspicious of.
They use it as, like, visual cues,
yeah.
which is surprisingly clever for this movie.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was a little impressed by that. These guys have them in their offices. And then also the sheriff... It was in the sheriff's office. So the previous sheriff would have been Confederate sympathizer, I guess. I don't know what you call them. Someone who would fly a Confederate flag.
What do you call?
I don't know.
A lot of people just say Southern pride, but...
Rednecks. I don't know. I'm not trying to... Anyway. On his way out, Sheriff Kyle encounters a mysterious figure who turns out to be Rene LaRocque. He gives him a warning to leave and disappears. Back in his truck, he comes across half of the corpse of the previous sheriff. Meanwhile, the oil riggers open fire at something rustling in the swamp. The extra racist one gets scared and hides in his outpost where he's attacked by a creature.
So this is where the movie starts to feel a bit more like a creature horror film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I could have done a little bit more of that.
Yeah, because all the stuff in the town, it's like they try to make it feel like a horror film while he's in the town, but everyone's just acting weird for no reason, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everyone's being cryptic and creepy. It's like, why?
Yeah, I would have liked a lot more creature horror. And mm-hmm. I feel like towards the end of the movie, if we're going to jump around a little bit, it kind of becomes, is this a detective mystery or is this a creature horror? Or are these two plot lines just happening simultaneously and no one wants to, like, make the connection? You know what I mean?
If they connected it better, it could have been something pretty cool.
Yeah. I think this movie has a bit of an identity
crisis
issue. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the part where I learned that this actor, the guy who plays Kyle, is also Australian. Because when he screams, "Don't fucking move," if you listen to it, it could not sound more Australian. And I'm like, oh, he's doing a pretty good job other than this part here.
It is also the first time, like, because we had seen Rene mentioned before, but this is the first time we see him. He actually seems kind of cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have some issues, but let's keep going. The coroner studies the corpse while smoking. The two are called over to the oil rig to find the dead body of the extra racist one that got killed in the previous scene. His body was impaled by a tree branch, blood splattered, and there's a giant hole in the wall. Cigarette in mouth, the coroner finally admits that just like the others, the branch didn't actually impale him, but is growing out of him. Mm. These details weren't filed because the previous sheriff demanded that they'd be classified as gator attacks.
Oh, so he was trying to cover it up, it seems.
Yeah. That's what the Confederate flag is for. It's not really to say that he's a bad character, but that he's done bad things.
Yeah, because...
It's a little bit of foreshadowing, yeah.
We find out later a little bit more about the sheriff.
I think it's so you don't trust him.
Right.
You don't just think of him as like, oh, he's an innocent victim. He's a victim, but like... Yeah,
something's up though.
He got a little dirty. He was at least complicit in this conspiracy, right?
Yeah, and I kind of like the elements of body horror that we get too with the corpses, like the branches are growing out of the corpse.
I really like that.
That was cool
because I was like, oh, Swamp Thing impaled him, no big deal. No, he fucking like planted a seed and the seed grew out of him, and there's a branch that took his tongue out on the way out.
Yeah,
And there's I mean they didn't mention it, but I imagine that there's no entry wound either,
right?
Like there's no place it would have entered his body.
That's creepy.
and that's something I think they should have gone into way deeper, because that is cool. That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
I wrote down, I know Renee.
I know.
Because that's exactly how she said it.
I know Renee. Sounded like Kano from Mortal Kombat.
Sheriff Kyle and his deputy pay a visit to the Thibodeau boys. Those are the two hillbillies from the beginning of the movie. On their way to hunt down Rene LaRocque, ignoring pleas from Terry. The Thibodeaus continue their attempts to intimidate, but the sheriff shuts them down and warns them to stay out of his investigation. That night in the swamp, their boat breaks down, so they seek some canoes at a local shack. We find out that that's the photographer, the conspiracy theorist.
Oh, yeah.
That's his shack.
Hiding out there.
Yeah, I think his name is Plug.
Which is apparently the name of one of the writers of Man-Thing at one point.
Oh, really?
Yeah, either writer or artist, one of the two.
Oh, we talked about this in the fucking review, remember?
Oh, we did.
We said who was the creator, and we're like, I said, that name's ridiculous. Let me verify that it's real. It's real, and it's Plug.
He was one of the, I believe, artists or pencilers of Man-Thing.
Okay, so I'll just call him Plug from here on in. Anyway, that's the photographer, conspiracy theorist. The deputy refuses to continue. Yeah, he's scared. We see a tree branch hand move. Meanwhile, the Thibodeau boys ignore the sheriff's warning and canoe through the swamp to hunt down Renee. They're briefly separated until the skinny brother finds the fat brother dead, hung up on a tree where branches seem to grow out of his face.
And he's like, oh no, what happened to you? The corpse looks gruesome, though.
Yeah, I'd love to know if these actors are American and Southerners or from Louisiana, because
they're convincing.
Very much so. Yeah, like they look real.
They're the two that are the most convincing, yeah, in this
they
movie.
They look like they fished them right out of the swamp.
And flew them to Australia.
Yep. I quite like them. I mean, I don't like their characters. They're
terrible.
They're scary, actually.
Yeah. But
like, again, they awoke a real fear in
acting
me.
Acting-wise, they might have been the two strongest.
I think so, yeah. I really like these guys. Sheriff Kyle finally encounters Renee, where he falls into a booby trap. Renee admits he convinced the tribe to sell the land, thinking it would help. His friend Ted Salas wouldn't agree, and once he disappeared, the Guardian of the Dark Water started killing intruders.
Suspicious.
Hmm. This is my biggest problem with the movie, by the way. I'll get into it. Kyle escapes, Renee runs away, and the creature appears to rip the wandering deputy apart right in front of Sheriff Kyle.
This is the part of the movie I remember seeing as a kid.
Yeah, yeah. This might be the least impressive effect. It's just
it's too quick.
Well, it's a very, very cheap CGI.
It's cheap CGI of just him getting ripped. All of his limbs ripped off.
He
just explodes.
He looks like an N64 character exploding.
Yeah.
Like, it's not good. For some of the other things, like, I think Man-Thing looks fine. Considering the budget, 2005, I think Man-Thing looks really good.
He looks kind of cool, actually.
Yeah, but that was bad. Sheriff Kyle wakes up to the conspiracy theorist photographer, so that's Ploog, taking pictures of the deputy's remains. They go back to his shack, where Ploog shows him the pictures he took of the man, Thing, Man-Thing.
That's the name of the movie.
Yeah, there you go. This is back in the era where they just can't... They're dancing around it because they don't want to say the fucking campy-ass name, right?
Yeah.
Back in town, Sheriff Kyle and Terry pay a visit to Pete, the Indian shaman. He explains that Ted didn't actually agree to sell the land, and that the spirit guardian that lives in the dark water protects what ancestors call the nexus of all realities. It seeks blood for blood spilt and will kill everyone. Kyle leaves angry, and Terry follows, insulted by his behavior towards Pete, a dear friend of hers. He admits he's scared he won't be able to protect her, and for absolutely no other reason at all, the two kiss passionately.
Yeah, Sheriff Kyle was just very, like, rude here and stuff, and then now they're making out.
And yep, it is a handbrake turn because she's mad at him for how he was rude to Pete, because he's like, I don't believe in any of this mumbo jumbo bullshit.
And Pete gets very like upset.
I gotta go. Yeah. And he's like, she's like, how dare you talk to him like that? And he's like, I'm afraid I won't be able to protect you. She's like, kiss me, you fool.
Also, this movie, that's the only mention of the nexus of all realities in this movie. And the movie does not go into it at all.
I feel like, and my main kind of complaint for this film is that there seems to be a lot missing. I'm fine with an hour and a half long slasher, but the movie is more ambitious than that.
It's introducing a lot of stuff that it just doesn't really follow through on.
Right. Yeah. And so when you kind of jump the gun on a lot of these plot points, like suddenly they're in love. Okay, they should have gone on a date earlier in the movie.
Should have just cut the romance subplot altogether.
Yeah. It accomplishes absolutely nothing, because whenever they do kiss, and it's going to happen a couple more times in this, it is so unwarranted. It is in the least sexy times possible.
Yep.
Later on, they're going to be in the middle of the swamp being attacked, and they're like making out. For what? Like,
because they might not see each other again.
Because, they're under this formula where, like, oh no, the leads have to, they have to be in love.
Yeah,
there has to be a love subplot.
It does bring this movie down a bit.
Oh, yeah. But there's no fully realized love subplot. What it is just they kiss a few times. That's it.
And it's weird and it wastes time.
It's absolutely weird. So if you wanted that to work, they would have needed a couple more scenes earlier in the movie where they show that they have chemistry. Not just some vague sexual tension, like when he leans over her to get the sugar at the diner. Yeah, that's not enough.
That's just weird.
You need them to like go on a date. He needs to visit her at school or something.
Yeah.
They need some more so that then they're like, it pays off. There's no setup, right?
Yeah. Because we don't have that here.
No, not at all. And then it's like, yeah, you're mentioning the nexus of all realities. It seems like Marvel is like, hey, like, this is what the character is. These are things we want to do with the character. And as a reminder, Marvel Studios was founded so that Marvel could have more creative control over their properties instead of just having to like sell them to studios and hoping that they make a good movie.
Yeah.
So around this time period, they're like, we want to have more creative control over the film. And you can see that in some places, like mentioning the Nexus of All Realities. What does that mean? Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. It was mentioned. It's from the comic.
Like, are we going to get into like the magic of it? No, we're going to see the shaman
do it. Not even
a
little bit.
We're going to see the shaman kind of predict the future a little bit, and that's it. So what's it matter? You know, and then my biggest gripe, and I'm going to get into it later. I don't want to, just straight up spoil it. So much mention of Ted Salas. For what? They never actually say that he is Swamp Thing. Or, goddammit, Man Thing.
It's heavily implied, but yeah, it's never directly.
Is it implied, or is it because we already know the answer?
I think it's implied.
But if you watch the movie not knowing that Ted Salas becomes Man Thing, could you figure it out through the context of this film?
Probably not.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's just kind of like,
the reason why it was implied for me is like, okay, after Ted was killed and I guess buried in the swamp, that's when Man Thing started killing people.
I feel like, yeah.
It's
in the movie.
Yeah.
But the movie doesn't tell us.
No.
But it's clearly
implied if you have comic book knowledge.
Yeah. They had plans for it. There is setup for Ted Salas to be important because they mention him a lot, right?
Yeah, so many times.
But then they drop that thread at the end, and it's like there's no moment where they're like, hey, Ted Salas became this creature. The Man Thing is Ted Salas. Oh my God, that's where he went. They say he was murdered. That's it.
Doesn't Renee say to him, like, I know you, like, once?
Does he?
I think. It's like one line.
I watched this movie an hour ago and I didn't catch any of that. So anyway, I'm sorry. I'm jumping ahead. Let's move on. The passionate moment is interrupted by the oil tycoon, Schist, who threatens Sheriff Kyle and orders him to drop his investigation if it means involving the FBI. Kyle states he only takes orders from the county, but Schist yells that he is the county. I am the Senate. Having arranged for his hire in the first place. Sheriff Kyle prepares his weapons and tells Terry he's going in after Schist in the swamp, suddenly having no patience for the FBI he said he would call. He literally was like,
I'm going to call the FBI. I'm going to do this myself.
I don't have time. There's no time. I got to go. Pete, the shaman, foresees the impending death and goes out into the swamp to lure out Man-Thing. He appears as an enormous humanoid of branch-like tentacles making up his entire back like a squid monster or Dr. Octopus. Pete begs Man-Thing to take his life as penance for the whole swamp, which Man-Thing obliges.
The scene, I don't think, made much sense.
It really didn't, and that's just what I'm saying about Man-Thing being the guardian of the Dark Water, the nexus of all reality. And Pete understands that. What does the scene accomplish where Pete
if anything, Man-Thing should let Pete go.
Yeah. I think my other big gripe with this film is that they don't approach Man-Thing benevolently at all.
No, it's like he's a monster that kills people.
Yeah. He's not misunderstood. He's not the secret good guy. Like at some point it's like, yeah, he's killing the oil. Like he's mad about the oil.
Right.
Right. And that's, but he's also killing the good guys. That's what Pete said. And then he kills Pete. Pete's innocent. And Pete's offering his life as penance, and it's like...
And Man-Thing's like, okay, but I'm still going to go kill Pete.
Yeah. So what does it accomplish? What he should have done is Pete should have refused and said, no, I'm not going to kill you. Not say anything, but just walk away.
You mean Man-Thing should have refused?
What did I say?
Pete.
Yeah. Man-Thing should have refused Pete's offer.
That would have, one, been more interesting.
And it would have painted the picture of what Man-Thing's agenda is.
Right.
Right.
Like, he's not... a villain.
Right. What are his motivations? His motivations are to kill the bad guys. Cool. Yeah. That's what we want.
Right.
And it sort of pays off at the end, but it would have been set up better if we understood that Man-Thing is not the bad guy.
Yeah.
So.
Big misstep here, plot-wise, I think. Cool scene. Didn't make sense.
It was a cool scene. It was a good opportunity to kind of see the creature in its full glory, yeah. Right? The coroner calls Terry looking for Kyle, having found a bullet inside the mutilated corpse of the previous sheriff. Kyle runs into Ploog deep in the swamp, who dies pretty quickly and predictably.
Because he's running around flashing his camera.
He's like, I'm going to be famous. I couldn't find aliens in Area 51, but I will find this thing.
And he just gets shot.
Terry also enters the swamp looking for Kyle. Now, the oil duo, Schist and his son, Kyle, Terry, Renee, and Man-Thing are all wandering the swamp looking for each other. Renee attacks Schist's son. Kyle and Terry find each other, and Kyle explains his hypothesis. Ted Salas was killed by Schist for the land. The previous sheriff knew, so he was murdered. Renee is the last loose end, and now the Schist family is out to murder him.
So there's a lot going on in these last 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, this is a little messy for me, I think. I think the idea is there, and I think the idea is good. I like this mystery element.
I like the story of this movie.
I like the detective mystery angle that they're taking. Mm-hmm. But also, it's like, the payoff is weird. I think maybe there should have been more having to do with Renee. Renee should have, I don't know. The exposition here is kind of strange.
Yeah. At this point, it all feels very rushed, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's like, we need to get to the end of the movie now.
Yeah. I don't know if... I mean, I guess this is the full version of the movie. I don't know if it was edited down for TV, but...
It's possible, but yeah, no, as far as I know, this is the only version that you can watch.
The fact that we saw boobs in the beginning tells me that this is the movie and not the version for TV, because there's no way...
There's no way Sci-Fi Channel, yeah.
Had just bare titty.
That's no, not yeah, yeah.
Schist finds Renee, setting his oil rig up to explode. Schist admits to having murdered Ted Salas and burying him under the rig. Terry and Kyle find them as they run away from Man-Thing. Schist shoots both Renee and Kyle, but before he can kill them, is found by Man-Thing, who stabs him with his fingers and injects his body with his own drilled oil.
This was a cool death.
This was a great death, yeah. Oil vomits from his mouth, and he's cast aside. It also, like... oozes out of his eyeballs.
Yeah, like just every orifice, there's just oil coming out. Ugh.
Kyle tries shooting Man-Thing, but Renee detonates the rig. The explosion kills Renee, but has no effect on Man-Thing. Instead, he looks quite pleased at Renee's penance and the destroyed oil rig. He disappears underground. Kyle and Terry share another ill-timed, passionate kiss.
It's a little anticlimactic, I think.
Yep.
Because This is just the end of the movie.
Also, it's the end of the movie. Yeah, if you're expecting like one more scene for them to say goodbyes, maybe show that Terry and Kyle are now together and well-established in the town, and the town is safe and prosperous. Too bad. Movie's over.
No, the credits start rolling. Oh my God, it happened so quick.
Yep. And I think, you know, to what I was mentioning earlier, Man-Thing doesn't even try to kill Terry and Kyle. So there is a little bit of that implication that maybe he is benevolent.
Yeah, they run just because they see him and they get scared.
Right.
Which, by the way, I thought that scene was actually really cool looking when they're just going through like the pitch black swamp.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was cool. That felt very horror.
But all of the parties just kind of like finding each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's strange writing to me.
They'll just meet up at the
oil
rig.
They're like, oh, we're all here. Oh, Man-Thing's here too. Okay, perfect. So now
I'm not gonna kill you. Yeah, he is.
If you're gonna, if the script says you gotta kill somebody, raise your hand. Okay. Go ahead and do that now. Like, that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Know?
Like, there was a lot of cool stuff.
But the fact that Ted Salas is Man-Thing, now was the time. And again, the implication is there because he's like, I killed him and I buried him right here.
Right.
Cool. Are we going to explain?
I buried him in the dark waters where Man-Thing came from. And, you know.
Like, I thought Kyle was going to say something to him and be like, we know you're Ted. Like... chill out. I don't know. Something. Like, I know you. And like you said, Renee. I thought Renee and Man-Thing know each other. Apparently, they don't. Like, I thought Renee was Man-Thing's, like, keeper.
Oh, nah.
That could have worked really well.
That would have worked well.
Because
Much that could have worked better than what they did.
The entire movie, Renee's running around the swamp. And they're like, yeah, he's a swamp guy. That's what he does. And I'm like, cool, that works for me. So that means that he is, like, helping Man-Thing. They're working together. They're in cahoots with each other.
No, nope. And that would have been cool, because I already thought Renee was a cool character. He was cool. They just decided not to do anything else with him, though.
I thought maybe at the end, when we finally see them together on screen, they would talk to each other like friends, like, hey, this is the plan.
Ted, chill.
You know, I'm going to set the thing to explode just like our plan or whatever. Like, I thought that was going to be the twist,
mm-hmm.
And it would be a very overt way of telling the audience that is Ted. They've been working together. Renee doesn't seem to know that Man-Thing is Ted.
And I guess Man-Thing is just like, oh, Renee killed himself.
Cool.
But he took the oil rig with him. Awesome. I'm done.
Yeah. And he sort of disappears into the ground.
He just like fucks off.
Great.
I guess the town's safe now.
Great. Do we know that for sure? No. There's no scene at the end of the movie.
Yeah, it just ends.
Anyway, that's the movie.
That's the plot.
What a ride.
So analysis. Yeah, the things we were saying about the story, like I think there's some really good ideas here on paper, but in execution, it's just all over the place.
This movie's got a lot of problems. It is a fun movie.
It's generous.
I wouldn't have bought a ticket to watch this, though, if that makes sense. Like, I'm glad I watched it, but...
Then you would have bought the ticket. So what does that mean? I'm not a fan of that, like, measure of quality, because it's like a catch-22, like... In order to know that, you would have had to buy a ticket.
Right. But the fact is, like, I can say that now because, like, you can watch this movie for free. And if you're going to watch it for free, is what I'm saying. Because it's available on, what is it, Tubi TV for free? It's
Tubi. I think I rented it.
You rented it? Yeah. I watched it for free.
You watch commercials?
Yeah, it's a TV movie. The commercials kind of work.
I guess. Yeah, but you just said it wasn't a TV movie.
It wasn't created as one, but it was released as one.
There were a lot of things I thought were okay, honestly.
Like crappy little monster movies, it's not a bad movie.
I thought there were some okay things. I really liked the Thibodeau brothers.
Thibodeau.
That's how he says it. I thought they were very scary, and I thought they were good actors. The rest of the actors are trying to hide their Australian accents the entire time.
Very poorly.
I don't like the way that they treat Man-Thing in this. Because they just make him just a monster. Like he's the villain.
It's not the case with the character.
Right. Like, I think they should have played it more misunderstood character. The movie starts going in that direction in a few places and then just kind of, like,
stops.
Jumps away.
Yeah. It hints at, like, you know, he's doing this for a reason, and then that's it.
Yeah, like you could.
It's strange that he started doing this when we started digging for oil here.
Right. And then, like, Pete's over here saying, like, no, he's protecting the nexus of all realities, and he's doing this.
Yeah, he says that, and that's it.
And then he kills Pete, so, like, none of that mattered.
And he kills Pete, and also, like, Kyle. The sheriff's name is Kyle, right?
Yeah.
Kyle's just like, I don't believe you.
Yep. My biggest problem with the film is that they never tell you that Ted Salas is Man-Thing.
Yeah.
The movie makes a big deal about Ted Salas only to not explain why it's making a big deal of Ted Salas. Like, the whole movie, it's like, he was the first missing person. Like, he's the one that took the money and ran. Like, where'd he go? No one knows where he is now anymore. And then crickets. Like, we don't ever mention
then it's like,
him again.
It turns out he did know what was going on. I don't think he ran away. I think he was killed.
Oh, yeah. I remember perking up at that point and being like, oh, we're going to expose him to be...
It's hinted that he's killed and becomes the Man-Thing. Because he even says, like, oh, yeah, I buried Ted right here.
But if this wasn't based on a comic book, this is something that you would have, like, theories about after the movie.
Yeah.
It'd be like, oh, was that character really dead the whole time? Like, you'd be like, is the creature him? Like, that's an interesting fan theory. Like, it's not clear at all.
And then, like, you do a Google search, you're like, oh, it is him. The movie just didn't explain it.
Yeah, but what if you have a director thinks one thing and a writer thinks the other thing, and then you argue about it for years?
Was Ed Norton involved with this movie?
Anyway, the love story that doesn't belong in it at all.
That part was horrible.
And when I say, like, it doesn't belong, like, and again, we explored this when we were talking about the plot, but it's like, you know, these two characters meet and they have no reason to like each other other than they're both hot.
She kicks him in the balls or something,
and then
right?
They, like, kiss, like, two scenes later.
Yeah.
They share a little bit of sexual tension, and there's, like, a salt shaker that he tries to grab, and... Later on, like, he's like, I just want to protect you, and that's all it took. Like, that's the one romantic thing that happened to them.
It's just not enough.
It doesn't need to be there, and the movie would be better without it, honestly.
Oh, it'd be better if it had, like, a full-on love plot.
Or just get rid of the love plot and focus on the mystery that you half-assed.
That, yeah, sure, that too. I'm just, you could have done both, you know? This movie's an hour and a half long.
It's very short. It's a very short movie.
You could have just, you know, 20 more minutes. Do both things. I don't know. Make it an hour 45, hour 50. Would do wonders for this film.
I feel like that's the case for a lot of the movies we talk about here, too. It's like, just like a little bit here and there would have just made this so much better.
Yeah. Look, if you think that we're just saying that all movies need to be longer, that is not what I'm saying. I'm saying
there's some movies that are too long.
Avatar. We were just talking about... I'm so fucking, you know, and we're doing the Transformers films eventually, and I'm so terrified.
Oh, I think those are too long.
Those are so... I'm just so scared. Like, I'm not looking forward to that.
I have fond memories of the first movie, and that's it.
Yep. And that's it. Same. Same. But we were just talking about Werewolf by Night, a movie, a special presentation, if you will. That's 53 minutes, and it is perfect.
Yes.
At that time. It does exactly what it needs to do. It accomplishes its story in that amount of time perfectly.
Yes. And it's one of those things where I would have liked a little bit more here and there, but it didn't need it.
Werewolf
by
Night.
It got the job. Yeah, Werewolf by Night. Not Man-Thing.
No, we said Werewolf by Night would have to be a completely different story if you wanted to make it longer. You know, if you want it to be feature-length...
You'd have to make it a feature-length movie. You'd have to structure it like one.
It would have to be a completely different story. Yeah. Whereas this is an hour and a half, and they bit off way more than you could chew in an hour and a half. And so you get this product that is kind of confusing.
They were overly ambitious.
And they're really at the end, just kind of like, again, like, hey, where's the story going? Raise your hand if you die. Okay, cool, you die now. Like, that's it. We're done. So, I don't know. Again, there are a lot of elements I really liked about it. I thought some of the story was clever. We talked about the Confederate flag symbolism. Placing those next to characters that you should be suspicious of, that's all really good.
Mm-hmm.
Cinematography, what do you think about the look?
A lot of the movie looks like it has like a weird green filter over it.
Yeah, kind of a yellowish hue.
Yellow hue, yeah. Listen, I don't think this movie looks that good. I don't think it's a very pretty movie.
No, I think it's mostly fine. Better than your average TV movie, but there are some parts where I'm like, this looks like a TV show.
Yeah, for sure.
There was some like back and forth dialogue where I'm like, camera's really close up on this guy. Like, step it back. Like, is this meant for small TVs? Is that why you put the camera there? Or is this supposed to be on the big screen? Like, pick a lane, you know?
Well, and that goes back to what we were talking about before. It's like, this was originally intended to be like a direct-to-video thing. And then they were like, oh, let's make it for theaters.
Oh, I thought it was the other way around.
They decided to bring it to theaters after the success of like...
Okay.
But as they're making this, is it going for TV?
Sort of?
In the initial planning of it, yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Again, and then it ended up just on TV, not even direct-to-video.
Yeah. From a cinematography perspective, most things... Now, today, they shoot them very similarly because everyone has big screen TVs.
Yeah, they're starting to shoot shows in the IMAX format.
Yeah. Like, if you put on, House of the Dragon today, you wouldn't be able to discern that in just how it looks from a movie at all.
Right, because...
It's filmed exactly like that.
Yep. Very high budget, very, you know, a lot of production value there.
Right. But back in the day, you know, you filmed things completely differently if they were going on straight to TV. Different cameras, obviously different aspect ratios, and everything was generally shot up close because people had small, shitty TVs.
Yeah, so you had to be able to see what was going on.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why, like, you put a movie on a TV and most people would be like, ah, you know, it's not the same as seeing it on the big screen because, fuck, if you're not sitting right in front of your 25-inch TV, then, like, you're not going to have a good experience.
Right.
That's where the idea of pan and scan came from, because they're like, we can't put a widescreen on a full screen on a 4x3 TV and make the picture smaller. People are going to hate that.
Yeah.
You know, so we got to actually blow it up and crop it out in different places. So it's okay.
Yeah, it's eh. Yeah, there's not a lot to analyze here. The movie comes very close to like being kind of deep, and then it just, it's almost like it shies away from it. Like a lot of movies we cover, I feel like.
Maybe. I think you're giving a lot of credit. If I'm honest. Let's move on to Keep or Cancel, Birdo. Rachel Taylor. Do you know who she is?
I know that she was in Transformers, and she was in Jessica Jones, and that's all I know about her. I guess she's Australian.
Australian actress and model, yeah. So... All I know is what you said, and I don't think I would have made those connections. Like, I don't think I ever made the connection from Transformers to Jessica Jones. But, like watching this, like, she's clearly Australian.
Yeah.
Like we mentioned, she gets to use her Australian accent in Transformers. But in Jessica Jones, she does a really good job of not using it.
A much better job.
She started as a model for Sky Jilly International. So it seems like her first major role was this Man-Thing. I was looking for something a little bit earlier, but there's really not.
This was like her first like real acting gig?
She was in a couple.
Oh yeah, a year later she was in See No Evil, that horror movie starring Kane from WWE.
None of those words did anything for me.
It's a slasher film.
Kane
from WWE. He's a wrestler. I think he's like a governor now.
He's like a mayor.
Yeah, he's...
Wow.
He's like a political figure now, yeah.
Yeah, so Transformers, it's the first one. I just remember that there's Megan Fox, and then there's her, and they play the quote-unquote hot girls. Although
wasn't she like a hacker or something?
She's like a... I thought she was a scientist.
Scientist?
Philly.
Philly.
Phyllison. She a hacker or a scientist? Anyway, while we wait for an answer. Shudder, Bottle Shock.
Bottle Shock. Bottle Shock.
Deception, Cedar Boys. But The Darkest Hour.
She was in The Defenders and Luke Cage. Which is, it's her same role from Jessica Jones, though. So.
Yeah, so let's just jump over to TV.
Hercules.
Not the Kevin Sorbo one, I'm sure.
No, not the Kevin Sorbo Hercules. One from 2005. I think it was a local Australian TV miniseries.
Sounds about right.
Anyway, but look, bunch of crap. Till Grey's Anatomy, 2011, she was in 8 episodes as Dr. Lucy Fields.
Hmm. I don't know who that is.
Garbage TV show. Charlie's Angels, which is the TV Charlie's Angels, not the movie, obviously.
There was a TV one?
Yeah, there's been, they've done TV spinoffs of
We got her role in Transformers from Philly.
She plays Maggie. She's a hacker. Okay, so, right. Recruited by the Department of Defense because there is a hack like they've never seen before. She discovers the code hidden in the hack and takes it to Anthony Anderson, who is just fantastic as comedy relief.
Anthony Anderson from Kangaroo Jack?
Maybe? Yeah, no, Anthony Anderson was fun. I always remember the scene with the donuts. He's like, they put the donuts out because they think if you don't eat it, it's because you're guilty. I ate every single donut. That's a good scene. That might be That might be the best scene in all of Transformers.
He's really good comic relief in that movie. They try to make Tyrese Gibson sort of comic relief in the military side of the story, but it doesn't work.
Anyway, we'll revisit this because we decided to watch those.
Yeah. And Power Rangers.
Anyway, yeah, so 2015, Jessica Jones, she's in all 3 seasons, I believe, as Trish Walker. She's also in Luke Cage and The Defenders playing Trish Walker. What I don't believe we see her as, and I didn't see Jessica Jones 2 or 3, is her as Hellcat.
Season 2, she does that. That's when she becomes annoying.
Oh, okay.
She's like trying to be a superhero, and I'm like, stop.
But she is a superhero. Hellcat.
Yeah, but in the show, in the context of the show, she's trying to be a superhero and it's not working out, and she becomes like addicted to it.
That does seem annoying.
She starts taking I think those pills that Nuke was taking in season 1.
Is that what it's all about? Because in season 2, in the beginning, he's in that the first 3 episodes.
It's
that's when I dropped off.
It's not what the season's about, but the season's like, I think, more about her mom. Yeah, season 2 is rough.
More recently, a movie called Ladies in Black and Finding Steve McQueen. That one stars...
Lightning McQueen.
No, incorrect. That one's got the guy from Vikings and Warcraft in it.
Oh, Travis Fimmel.
Yeah.
He's an okay actor.
It also has Forrest Whitaker in it and William Fichtner.
Huh. Yeah. That might be one of her biggest roles yet.
Well, it's a small movie.
Oh. It might be some... But, oh, no. I guess Transformers would be the biggest movie she was in, technically.
Anyway, so yeah, that's all I got on Rachel Taylor.
Okay.
Small-time stuff, really. I don't know. I kind of expect her to have bigger roles. Like, I feel like she's pretty good.
Based on what I've seen of her, like, in, like, Jessica Jones and even Transformers, yeah, she's pretty good. Even in this movie, she's all right.
Yeah, she's all right.
A little bit of trouble hiding the accent, but, you know, she's all right.
She's just miscast. Like, it's not her fault. Like, yeah. She shouldn't be playing, like, a Louisiana girl.
Yeah, also, like, you went to Australia, like, hey, you're playing a local from Louisiana. You better start being Southern.
You better get that Southern Belle act down pat.
She doesn't.
So, no, I'm going to say not only keep, I think promote.
Yeah, she should do more, honestly.
I think do bigger stuff. I think she should get some bigger roles. I think she's pretty good.
Bring her back into the MCU.
Yeah, bring back Trish Walker.
If she hasn't been killed. I haven't seen season 3, so I don't know.
We don't know what happens. So, hey, that's it. All right, Birdo, into the Phantom Zone, man thing.
Ooh, this is actually kind of tough.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because one, this movie was kind of already in the Phantom Zone because I'd never heard of it. But like when I found out there was a Man-Thing movie, I kind of got excited.
Yeah.
But then I watched it and I was like, oh, there's the bones of something good here. And I think more people should explore the character Man-Thing. And I think it will be explored more now that we have him in the MCU proper. But this movie, listen, it was fun. It was a fun watch overall, but I don't think I could recommend it. I think I'm going to put it back in the Phantom Zone because it doesn't need to exist.
Wow.
Sorry.
Devastating blow there. I'm this is easy for me. It's Phantom Zone. I'm not going to say I didn't enjoy it at all. Like, I thought it had some, like you said, it had some bones in there.
I wasn't, like, miserable watching it.
I mean, there's some literal bones. But
some cool kills, too.
Yeah, so everything about this movie, I feel like, was just underbaked. I think they could have really explored a lot more. They could have made it a fun detective movie with a superhero twist because Man-Thing's actually the good guy. He's misunderstood.
Right.
They could have explored the love plot more. It could have been more of a movie.
Yeah. It could have been a better horror movie, honestly.
I thought the body horror element was a really good idea. That was
If they ran with that, I think this would have been a good movie.
Very barely utilized. Mm-hmm. Like, so small. So, I don't know. This is not a movie I would recommend. I would just be like, you know, it exists if you're interested, but that's not what this is all about. So, it's
a Phantom Zone. I'm not going around telling people to watch this.
Yeah, no. Phantom Zone. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, hey, thank you for listening. Thanks for being around for our Man Thing episode. Berto, what are we doing next?
I don't know.
It's either going to be, okay, because we've already recorded everything. So it's either going to be
our review for Black Adam.
Yes, Black Adam review or the Halloween special, guest starring my wife, Sable, and our good friend, Blake from Blake Steaks.
Okay, so it's probably going to be the Black Adam review.
Yeah, sure. It's not going to be, the Halloween thing's going to be on Halloween. So yeah. It's going to be one of those things.
So yeah, our next thing is our review on Black Adam.
Sure.
Stay tuned.
I don't think we have like a proper movie picked out yet. But,
no, because we juggled with the idea of Constantine, but I don't think it's going to work out.
Hmm. So, we'll see what we do.
Yeah.
We still have the death of the Incredible Hulk pending.
Yeah, we got to finish that off to just cap off all the Hulk stuff, and then we're free to tackle more things.
Sure. I'm not saying that's what's happening next. I'm just saying, keep that in mind. It'll come up before you know, right? So, anyway, guys, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing to the show. Thank you to that piano dude for a musical intro. Make sure you leave a rating and review on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, and tell a friend. And thank you for telling a friend. You can support the show on Patreon, where you can listen to our bonus podcast, Where's Mephisto? Berto, where are we looking for Mephisto?
We are currently looking for him in Andor, the Star Wars show that's...
In Andor.
Better than...
Are you caught up on Andor?
I haven't seen the latest episode, but I'm caught up.
What day is it today? Today's Monday.
Yeah, there's a new episode in 2 days.
In 2 days, okay. Yeah. I'm not...
So I need to watch the latest, and then I guess whenever this new one comes out.
I'm trying to... So I heard this last episode didn't feel like it's part one of a new arc.
It's just kind of its own thing.
Like, that's what I heard. I also think that person was lying. Whoa. So I... In either case, I want them to be closer together, so I think I'm going to wait a little bit longer.
I've been liking watching them in chunks. Like...
Yeah.
I don't want to binge it, but watching like a couple episodes at a time is nice.
Especially when they are related in like an arc.
Yeah.
Like that last 3-episode arc was so good.
It was so satisfying to watch the three of them back to back.
Yeah. So I think that's just how I'm going to do it. I'm not going to watch for another week. And then She-Hulk. Yeah, we just finished She-Hulk. That should be coming out soon. Oh, and the final episode, we had Blake and Sable. We recorded all that together, so they got to talk about She-Hulk. That was
so
fun.
They were also in that final episode of She-Hulk's Where's Mephisto.
If you guys want to hang out with us, you can do so on our Discord server. It is linked below. It's absolutely free. Just like join, talk to us week in, week out between episodes of the show. But if you want to be on the podcast, hang out with us while we record it. We stream our recordings live on Twitch, and we've got the chat here hanging out with us. So you can be on the show like Philly to the J, chatting with us, real comic book talk, and Jeezy Doctor for Ev. Look, if you want us to read your ridiculous username, then come down to Twitch Monday nights and hang out with us. Yeah. That's twitch.tv/filmsfrompz. Berto, what's your ridiculous handle?
Noob451.
God,
I made it when I was 12 and I was stuck with it.
What about, I was going to say, what a 2000s name.
It absolutely is.
XX exclamation point.
No, you only did that if you couldn't get your name.
You can find us on Instagram at Films from the Phantom Zone, Twitter on Films from PZ, TikTok Films from PZ, and lastly, all these episodes are available on YouTube, if that's how you like getting your podcasts. I'm almost up to date on those. So, there you go. Anyway, yeah, guys, so other than that, we'll see you next week. Not this next week. If you're streaming with us, not this next week, because I'm taking Halloween off.
It's his birthday.
It's my birthday.
So, ugh.
Ugh, right. Philly, oh, happy birthday to you.
Oh, yeah, happy belated birthday.
Belated you for yesterday. Was that yesterday? Time flies.
I believe it was yesterday.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's all for us, you guys. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.